listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Deirdre Desjardins previously did research on nonlinear dynamics and complex systems theory at the NASA Ames Research Center, at the Center for Nonlinear Studies, Los Alamos, and the Santa Fe Institute. Now she's here with the analysis of strange weeks of summer in March and the long drought in the American West. Her two blog posts, loaded with scientific references, have drawn national attention. Let's continue. Does the science suggest large heat domes will become more common as we heat the atmosphere, even just by a degree more than today?
So we've already seen that. And Stefan Ramsdorf, who's a German scientist who did work on the possible shutdown of the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, or AMOC. It's a big, huge ocean current that transports heat. Ramsdorf and other, and Robinson and others, note that, you know, the incidence of 3 and 4 standard deviation events has increased spectacularly. We're seeing a lot more ridging and a lot more extreme events. This is something that scientists have been seeing for a while, but it's been more in summer. Then that's associated. There's actually a shift in the planetary wave structure that they think happened, and they think that the atmosphere is preferentially creating these ridges, and they're lingering for longer because they're part of a planetary standing wave in the atmosphere. And one of the things that happened, I saw the 500 millibar height is how high that is whether you have a ridge or a trough. And so I look at the pattern, and I look at it focused on the Arctic, and I'm like, there's 5 lobes. It was very clear, except there was this big ridge partly over the ocean that was kind of distorting one of the lobes. I'm like, wow, this looks like wave number 5, and we know that from research that wave number seems to be more preferentially favored. It's changing, and part of the reason is the jet stream is shifting north, and the jet stream runs into the Alaskan Ridge now more often. And the Alaskan Ridge bends the jet stream when it hits it. So that's one theory. There's multiple theories about why we're seeing it, but that's what's happening in winter. And it favors these wave number 5. So I saw that and I went, wow. And, and I thought, well, let me look at it with Claude. And Claude and I looked at it, and we tied it to the literature. And then Claude actually made the link with, that still didn't explain why it was amplified so much, and Claude made the link with the atmospheric river coming up from Hawaii. So then we linked in all of these core mechanism papers on the ridge amplification in the June 2021 Pacific Northwest. And I wouldn't have made all those links myself. I read very broadly, but still more than one human can really do quickly.
Yeah, it's kind of like hiring some really good science researchers. I mean, you have to go and figure it out for yourself once you get those links. And I also find, though, that, and I see this in your blog posts, that there's the human reaction. Well, what does this really mean for me, a person with a brain? And you do that really well. In the first article, you also cover something close to your ongoing work, the impact of early heat on snowpack, and that's needed for summer water in the western states. What is the situation, Deirdre?
Oh, it's dire. So, the snowpack in the Sierra has pretty much just melted with this heat dome. It's just gone. So when the runoff's that fast, we capture less of it. It's also, terrible for ball run Chinook salmon. Living on the California coast, you know, we had salmon fishermen in Santa Cruz. So it was a really big part of the economy in the coast north of Mendocino, the fishing economy, and the salmon fishing industry has just been hammered because, you know, there isn't the flow. The salmon smolts preferentially migrate during these pulses, and to have a huge pulse in early March, we're not going to see the pulses in April or May. So it's very bad for water supply, it's very bad for salmon, and it's bad for other stream-dependent life.
So why was the winter of 2025 and 26 split into two different versions? You had snowy cold in the east for all our listeners there, but warmer, snowless parts in the west, and we've touched on that, but is that really one event, the split?
So what happens is because of this wave guide and the jet stream hitting the Alaskan Ridge is one process. There are multiple theories about why this is happening, but when they look at atmospheric shifts, they see this North American winter dipole pattern where there's a ridge in the west and a trough in east. It's just a lot more often. It's become the leading pattern of atmospheric variability. That's, you know, and that's what you saw. That ridge just kept coming back, and it would just park itself over the continent.
Why did the record-breaking heat and the cold in the east, why did it stay for weeks when most weather systems move on in days?
Well, the reason, again, is, and this is still an active area of study, and I haven't done a kind of attribution analysis. I'm mostly connected with the literature, but the literature shows that the old pattern was called the Pacific North American pattern, and that was a tripole, and it would shift between a high on the west and a low in the east and a low over the Pacific Ocean, and a high over the North Pacific, and a low over the West Coast, and a high over the East Coast. But this winter dipole is different, and it shifted just a quarter of a planetary wavelength eastward and southward relative to PNA, and it sits over the interior west and the Four Corners Great Basin region, and the trough sits over the Great Lakes and the Northeast. So the North American winter dipole, it gives you this warm west, cool east continental dipole that we've seen repeatedly all winter. There's a ridge over the southwest and the interior west, and then the Rockies is kind of a break. The atmosphere actually, the Rockies does affect atmospheric patterns. And then the trough is over the Midwest and the Northeast. And that's what we've seen repeatedly. We also saw it repeatedly. California had a terrible drought from 2012 to 2016. And we saw it, that pattern and ridges in the winter of 2012 to 2013, 2013 to 14, 2014 to 2015. Daniel Swain called. We had a ridge, the ridiculously resilient ridge. This pattern where we've got the warm west, cool east, the atmosphere has just shifted and we're seeing a lot more. And that's why we have the two winters. It's a regime shift. And that's from my, you know, nonlinear dynamics background. You know, the climate is undergoing these regime shifts, and they're not just internal variability. They're not just the atmosphere reshuffling. They're being driven by global warming.
I think a lot of us expected that the weather would change fundamentally for our grandkids, but here it is. And you emphasize, quote, the climate change connection operates through several pathways that compound rather than simply add. And I think that's probably the key to why it's coming faster. Do you want to tell us more?
Yeah, and I've actually been spending this week looking in detail at how those feedbacks are changing. So we didn't expect this, and our climate models don't capture this very well. Michael Mann and Steven Ramsdorf and others have written a paper on quasi-resonant amplification in the summer, which causes ridges to just be parked in the summer, and climate models just don't adequately capture it. Europe has had ridges parked over a lot in the summer and had record heat waves. We've seen it some here as well. This is slightly different because it's in winter, but there seems to be another atmospheric shift, and they're both sort of different mechanisms. When I started looking at what happened around 2013, 2014, the whole atmospheric leading patterns reorganized, and I'm like, boy, this looks like a regime shift. That's kind of the challenge, is to recognize this, because we have the climate is fundamentally nonlinear, and you have these different components like, you know, sea surface temperatures, deep ocean heat content, patterns in the atmosphere, precipitation, and how atmospheric rivers, where the atmospheric rivers hit, how much moisture they're hitting. And so you have both slow changes, like the slow increase in amount of moisture. That's kind of just a long, consistent trend the atmosphere can hold. And then you have these structural shifts where the atmosphere suddenly reorganizes how it interacts with the Pacific Ocean. And that's what we saw around 2013, 2014. And we're still understanding these reorganizations.
Yes, we have to try and figure this out while it's happening, and that makes it kind of challenging. We don't yet, for example, have all the science in, hardly any science in, on what just happened with the March heat wave in the West. I think we will get that science, but do you still have fundamental questions that you would like to see answered about this?
I think there needs to be more funding for synthesis of existing research, and I think particularly with the cut by the Trump administration to scientific research and climate research. One thing I'd like to highlight is the Trump administration has proposed moving the supercomputer out of the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, and potentially closing that center. That would be devastating for the kind of research we need to understand what's going on. We need people to oppose this. Even for people, Ryan Mao is a climate skeptic on X. He's also a very good meteorologist. He was thick head of NOAA under the first Trump administration, but even he recognizes that we're shifting into a new regime. He actually really liked my blog post and said, this is great because it explained the mechanisms. So even a meteorologist who's skeptical about global warming recognizes we're in a different regime. We're in a much warmer regime than we have been in the 20th century. And we've got to understand how it's changing. And that shouldn't be political. We've got to do the modeling. And, of course, all the 99% of scientists agree that climate change is real. It's here. It's happening now. We're seeing more and more effects. And, unfortunately, that's been politicized, and it shouldn't have been. But even if you question the changes, the cause of the changes we're seeing, it is absolutely undeniable that we're seeing them. And it may affect everything. It may affect where crops grow. They affect ridges like this. They affect rivers and stream flow and water supply. And we've got to understand them.
Right. Nature is changing rapidly right under our feet, and we're kind of putting on a pair of blinder glasses so we don't have to look at it. And shutting NCAR, as you mentioned, would be definitely putting on the blinders. As we wrap up here, do you have any other thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners, Deirdre?
Go follow my blog, California Water Research, and I'm going to change the name to something like California Water and Climate Research, because I'm definitely starting to focus more on the climate aspect. And Daniel Swain is also really excellent on this. And he does, if you live in the Western U.S., he does amazing analyses. If you live in the Jeff Berardelli, who's on X, not everybody's on X, but Jeff is amazing, and he's a meteorologist in Florida. But he really constantly produces very informative graphics about what's happening and the ridging and so on. So there are some good streams of content, you know. Yeah, I think it was a really good piece of science communication. And I also want to thank Anthropic for providing a model that can help with these kind of syntheses. I think it's going to really help.
Well, maybe as the government bails on research, we'll find more people like you and me willing to dig in and at least see what the science we've got so far is saying and translate it for everyone. And that is really the purpose of this radio show.
I'm very transparent that, no, I didn't do this all by myself.
I understand. I'm using Gemini and Perplexity as my research assistants now. I would love to have a budget where I could just hire some people, you know. But now that it's expanding our work. We have to be careful, but it is expanding it.
I think there's a Nature article that says we've achieved artificial general intelligence. And I'm like, yeah, Perplexity runs on Claude, too. And, yeah, it's really clear with Claude. Gemini is pretty smart, too. Gemini, it makes a huge difference because it's available to someone, to a journalist, right? You couldn't hire a postdoc or a grad student. I actually have like 6 Claude Opus instances right now analyzing shifts across a huge range of variables from, you know, like the troposphere and atmosphere. Heating to sea surface temperatures, ocean heat content, circulation, ocean and atmospheric circulation patterns in the North Pacific, and heating. And it's like, it's showing these staggering shifts. And then I'm like, oh my God, why didn't anybody put these pieces together? And I was like, well, because they couldn't do all these.
Okay, because I find this very interesting, and as I say, I'm using it too, although I have to say that some of our listeners are super critical of AI and think we shouldn't use it at all, and if we do, we're just encouraging the data centers to wreck the atmosphere. So it's a thorny subject for sure.
If you do knowledge work, AI is transformative. And what I did is I stopped using streaming, because streaming uses energy too. So I don't stream Netflix or other things like that. And they also have an energy footprint. Yeah, it's like for $200 a month, I'm on the Quad Max plan, and I can get what's essentially like 6 graduate researchers. And they'll pull climate data sets, they'll analyze them, they'll produce graphs. So can do shift analyses to find shifts. They can produce tables of all the shifts across indices. The game theory, and then they can do literature searches, like the one I just did. I mean, I do those, and I've done it by hand, but what Quad Opus did would have taken me 2 months. I'm not a specialist. And what happens is there's all these sub-areas of climate research. So Pacific Northwest mechanisms was one, and I had, you know, kind of done a shallow dive, but I hadn't done a really deep dive. I didn't know all the connections. Opus could go out there and find them. And I hooked Opus up to Site, S-C-I-T-E, and that made a huge difference. Site organizes papers by cluster, so it makes it a lot easier to follow the research chain.
I'm going to look into that. I can't afford the $200 a month at this point, and that's why I'm using Perplexity, sort of the free version. But we'll see. Perhaps if
Quad has a free tier too, and you can use Quad directly. I like Perplexity because Perplexity is like Quad but connected to the web. So Perplexity pulls in a lot of web search. So that might be a good pattern for the journalist. I will get into a conversation with Claude, and I'll say, well, what about this? And Claude will pull the data or go look at the literature and say, well, you know, and then they'll offer some insights, and I'll think about it, and I say, well, what about this? You know, and we go back and forth, and it's actually like I worked with some of the top research groups in the field of nonlinear dynamics and complex systems theory. I was at the Santa Fe Institute for Complex Systems when the field of complex systems theory was being founded, and I worked with Don Farmer's research group at the Center for Nonlinear Studies at Los Alamos, and it was like one of the leading centers in the world for complex, for nonlinear dynamics and chaos theory at the time. So these conversations are similar to those that I had with colleagues at those institutes. We're all in this together.
We are all in this together, so let's keep tabs of what's happening. From California Water Research, we've been speaking with the director, Deirdre Desjardins, and you can find links to her key blog articles, along with my notes and some deep dive links, all in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. Deirdre, thank you for this great work. I appreciate talking with you. I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog. No sign up, just the latest info, free for all. EcoShock.org.
Are we entering a summer of wildfires like never seen before? The high risk is there, with wildfires burning already in parts of America right now, way before the season starts. A new study published March 11th says climate change, even at supposedly low levels now, is turbocharging what they call wildfire weather. This dangerous change is not limited to North America by any means. A team of scientists combed through data from the last 40 years. Their conclusion, quote, "We find that the observed increase in extreme fire weather bears a clear externally forced signal, detectable at 99% confidence above natural variability, and attributable to human-induced climate change," end quote. Look for their paper, "The Emerging Human Fingerprint on Global Extreme Fire Weather." Wildfire also feeds back on the climate, making the planet warmer, and that starts more fires. For me, the greatest fast feedback comes with peat fires. Peat is a buildup of plant matter over thousands of years. On this planet, that has become a major reservoir of carbon. We advanced another step in warming with peat fires in Russia in 2010, peat fires in Indonesia in 97 and 98. That pushed that developing country into the third largest source of greenhouse gases in the world for that year. A new study published March 18th says peat fires contribute disproportionately to Siberian fire carbon emissions. Peat fires can burn deep into the ground, continuing under winter snow and lighting up again the following spring. They are far beyond any human firefighting capability. We may soon encounter fires lasting years or decades. The only solution is to drastically slash carbon emissions as fast as we can, and we have to hope for a way to draw carbon back out of the atmosphere. Recent science suggests the best way is not another machine or spreading dust over the skies, but protecting natural sinks like the great rainforests of South America and Africa. To survive, we need to help nature, not kill it. We were always just a part of the family of life here. Look after your wild relatives. They could save us, and only they can. One final word for Australian listeners. Yes, we see you. In a place well known for wild weather, this last few months has been crazy down under. Sure, Sydney had some doozy storms and strange temperature swings, but Western Australia takes the prize. They hit up to 45 degrees C heat, well over 110, and then suffered through Cyclone Narelle. The cyclone hit northern Queensland, which is kind of on the east side of the continent, bounced along the north coast all the way to the west. It struck it appeared to be over, went out over hot seas, reformed, and came back stronger than ever. This storm lasted almost 2 punishing weeks. Imagine a hurricane lasting weeks, crossing a whole continent. The shoreline with its turtles and creatures was devastated. Then, the petrol and diesel ran out on the West Coast because of the Gulf War blockage. Spare a little feeling for our friends in Australia. People in many countries are in a state of suspense. When will gas run out or get too expensive for most of us? What industries will close? What parts and food just won't show up? Is it time to stock up? If you can spend time with family and friends, that's a good thing. When the big system tries to break our hearts, we need to build community stronger. I'm Alex. Thank you for listening this week and caring about this world.
What do I hear? Echoes in the heat. 100,000 people talking with their feet. I see down in the street a million people talking with their feet. Hide in your bunker, order out the fright, tear gas and billy clubs filling up the night. Got to, gotta go, gotta make it stop. We're good on the ground but rotten at the top.
My dreams, my childhood, with your empty words. And yet, I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction. And all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you?
Trust. No confidence. Latest claim. No evidence. Rapid fire, all alive. Broken promise, all bow down.
All down.
To the golden calf, guns and bombs.
The worship shift for death and friends. No good way this ends. Someday, someday, when this ends.
Take me tripping,
lakes and trees, eyes crying,
crying.
Epic crimes, mind flying to better times.
Better, 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 better times.
Can be better,
better
when this
is over.